One of the kind of puzzling things for me anyway that comes out of the lockout is that there's a kind of workers' militia formed called the Citizen Army. But within 3 years of the lockout, that's involved in a nationalist insurrection. So what's the trade union militia doing, getting involved in this kind of thing?
Well, that's one of the great historical questions of early modern Ireland. I mean, that was due to James Connolly. Jim Larkin was the first, was there when the Citizen Army was founded. Jack White, who became an anarchist later, was a former British Army officer, sort of organised it and drilled them initially. But when Larkin went to America in 1914, James Connolly took over as the acting General Secretary of the Union, and he also took over as Commander-in-Chief, if you like, of the Citizen Army. And once the war broke out, Connolly seems to have taken a conscious decision to align fairly quickly with the radical nationalists in Dublin, members of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, who effectively controlled the Irish Volunteers in the city and in parts of the country as well, and they planned an insurrection with them. Now, there will be probably an interminable and eternal debate on why Connolly took that road, why he abandoned, if you like, the international socialist principles of his previous life. Now the reason seems to have been that he saw the war as an opportunity to strike a blow for Irish freedom, which would lead on then to an Irish socialist republic. And in some ways, I suppose it was similar to the gamble that the Bolsheviks took in Petrograd in 1917. As we all know now, the Bolsheviks led a large part of the international socialist movement down a cul-de-sac. But at the time, you could understand why some people decided to go that route and other people decided to go a different route. But in Dublin, I suppose it was a similar situation. But the Irish Citizen Army took part in the rising. It was effectively decapitated with the execution of Connolly, and people tend to forget now, but Michael Mallon and Sean Connolly, who were significant figures within the Irish Citizen Army, and William Partridge were, well, the first two were executed. William Partridge died as a result of his imprisonment experiences. He contracted Bright's disease, was released to die, basically. But the organisation was decapitated by Connolly's execution, and it really became a rump. Many of its more active members joined Sinn Féin and either joined the Irish Volunteers or were de facto members of the Irish Volunteers. But it really ceased to have a separate existence to any significant degree after the rising.
If you've been involved in a strike, which is for bread and butter things, a very bitter strike, but against a nationalist employer, and your biggest friends were in the British TUC, why did it seem natural for these people to get involved in a separatist rising, or a Republican rising, if you like?
Well, I think, funny enough, there's a lot of contradictions there. I mean, I think one of them is that, funny enough, you know, people do sometimes bite the hand that feeds. The British TUC gave a lot of assistance to the Dublin strikers, but in return, they expected the Dublin strikers to pay a bit of attention to what they were trying to do. And they were coming regularly to Dublin to try and negotiate a settlement. And that was resented to a large degree by the Dubliners. I mean, there was also a generational gap that the TUC leaders had been through all this themselves. They'd been through horrendous strikes and disputes in Britain. But for most of them, it had happened 10, 20 years beforehand. So they had these young, you know, upstarts who were refusing to take advice, who wanted to learn the hard way, the same lessons they had learned. They also only slowly realised that William Martin Murphy was a very nasty, vindictive, totally, you know, he was a figure who only believed in total victory. He wasn't going to do a settlement. It took a long time for that to sink in with a lot of people who were trying to intervene. The British government's own arbitration system under Sir George Asquith also tried to sort the problem out. And again, Asquith only slowly realised that Murphy was not someone who was going to do a deal. He only believed in total victory. So the Dublin Trades Council leaders, the transport union leaders who were working together on this, jointly came to resent, somewhat unfairly, but came to resent the help they were getting from the British TUC. They did see the refusal of the British TUC to have a sympathetic strike in Britain as a betrayal, even though there were perfectly logical reasons why they went that route, and it wouldn't have worked anyway. So there was that feeling of alienation from the British trade union movement. And it wasn't just Murphy. I mean, you've got to remember that the majority of employers in Dublin at that time were actually Protestant, and that did matter. That did affect people's attitudes as well. So, and they would be seen as British. So you had this weird situation where the British TUC was being reviled for not giving enough support to the strike, even though they were giving support on heroic proportions from their own members. They were, you know, being criticised for that. They're being criticised for trying to interfere in the strike. And the employers were also seen, along with Dublin Castle, as on the other side, which of course they were. So in a funny way, and the police, of course, were also seen as part of that repressive machinery, which again they were. So it all reinforced anti-British feeling in general. And I think once the First World War broke out, a number of other factors came into play there. Contrary to some revisionists, the First World War was never popular in Dublin, and I doubt if it was ever popular in most nationalist Ireland. And the support for Redmond's pledge of support for Britain, I think, has been grossly exaggerated. And if you look at the evidence on the ground, there's tons of evidence there to suggest that. It was never a popular war in Ireland. It only brought hardship and suffering. Most people hated it from day one. So 1916 was, in some respects, an event waiting to happen. And I think that the trade unionists in Dublin, like everybody else in the country, in the nationalist community, were very easily drawn into a separatist agenda when the time came.